Oh, we're not doing live live?
Not live live, no.
Okay.
But it is recording now. It goes to YouTube and then I can download it and record it.
Groovy.
Groovy. I think so.
Fantastic.
Did you have any questions you wanted? And you didn't get an answer from either of you on that.
No, I don't think so. I have my likes and don't likes and just other comments. So
okay. Perfect.
I already know one of Ryan's dislikes.
All right.
You can't say.
Don't say it now.
What's that?
You can't say Gaul.
No, that was not it. I'd never heard her name pronounced anywhere. So I just read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we ready?
I am.
Okay.
Do you have your big sheet of paper that says start now?
Yeah, I was going to order. I need to order a clapper like you were talking about. I know, because this honestly doesn't actually help me all that much unless I happen to catch right where it was.
I think you need to leave that in the broadcast.
Yeah, really?
Start. And then at the end, have one that says end.
No, fiend.
I need to get the little mutant enemy, like do my own mutant enemy characters. No. I can like, because that's all they were when they first made it, it was like paper. Yes.
Arr.
Yes. All right. Then take a sip of water because that's what I always do.
It's a true story.
Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches. For this month's episode, we are going to watch and talk about Wonder Woman. So I'm here today with Ryan and Mark. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
And as some of you may know, if you've been following the Geek Embassy or Game On Girl or anything involved with me ever, I'm kind of a big Wonder Woman fan.
What?
Just a little.
Just a little. So, Ryan, describe what it was like a couple of years ago to stay in my guest room.
Well, I woke up. I rolled over. When I got out of bed, I was wearing a cape, boots, and this little crown thing. It was amazing. It was like a magic trick.
Magically turned you into
I walk out to take my my morning constitution, and I'm dressed like Wonder Woman. It's awesome.
That's pretty much the size of it, yeah.
Yeah. Wonder Woman everywhere. She's watching me sleep.
A giant like cookie jar bust, which is up on my shelves right now. I now have a Wonder Woman piggy bank, like a big piggy bank, Wonder Woman piggy bank. The funny thing is almost everything that I have that's Wonder Woman is a gift that somebody else has given me. There are a handful of things I've bought myself over the years. But for the most part, everything that I have been gifted. So it's kind of my collection, and my in-joke for the collection, at least, is that most everything comes from other people. So, yes. So Wonder Woman's awesome. So I was kind of looking forward to this movie.
Just a little?
Maybe just a little bit. But I also was looking forward to it with some reservation, knowing that there was a lot of pressure to be put on not just this movie, but, you know, the character, because it was Wonder Woman, but also because it was like a leading female superhero. So it had a lot of sort of cultural baggage, let's say.
Well, I think we need to call back to our last episode when we discussed that we were going to be watching Wonder Woman. And
right.
Ryan was very trepidatious about it. You were somewhere in the middle hoping it was going to be good, but not expecting anything. And I was actually expecting it was going to be pretty good.
Right. And so how did we fall out from that? Like, how do we come out from that?
Well, how did you fall out with that, Ray? Since you were the least hopeful.
I was pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed the movie. They, you know, DC finally figured out how to be Marvel. It was awesome. That was my takeaway. They finally figured out the formula. Way to go, guys. Yeah.
It only took how many really, really bad movies before they got there.
Way to stop throwing paint at the wall and see if he made a picture. Come on.
I don't think they're trying to be Marvel. But
no, I'm not saying they were trying to be Marvel. I'm just saying, well, no, I think they were. I think they were trying to be Marvel. I take that back. I do mean that in every sense of the way.
Well, I don't.
If you look at it, Guardians of the Galaxy, and then you have what's that? That's also like music all over the place, music in the promo. You got Suicide Squad. It's like they're copycats.
Well, to a degree, but I think that the DC world is also a lot darker, and Wonder Woman definitely showcased that, and that you're dealing with World War I, which is one of the most horrific wars that the planet's ever seen. So I think that, yeah, they're trying to make good superhero movies too, but I don't think that they're necessarily trying to be Marvel specifically. I think they're trying to do their own thing, because I think DC has always been a little bit grittier than Marvel has.
Well, yes. I'm not saying they're trying to be, like, storyline-wise Marvel. I'm just saying they're trying to replicate the Marvel formula that's been winning for years upon years now.
Almost a decade.
To where they make movies that people want to go see because it's a enjoyable experience. Not like, what were they trying to do with that type thing?
Where you're left scratching your head trying to figure out, like, who was writing this or who edited this and, like, pieced it together in such a bad way.
Well, it was like when Superman came out, which was the first big DC movie after the Dark Knight series. Like, Superman was trying to be Batman. The same flavor as the Batman movies, and it didn't work.
Right.
So they just, and then they made Batman versus Superman, which I still haven't seen because nobody says I should. That's never a good sign when people go, yeah, don't watch it.
I liked that movie okay. I mean, it's all right, but it's not a superhero movie. My honest feeling has always been that Batman versus Superman is more like a political thriller that just happens to have superheroes in the end of it. That's how it felt to me. So it's kind
of,
where are we going with this?
Yeah, I haven't seen that either, but I've read certain things that give me that impression as well. I really do think a lot of what has been missing from DC movies is a fair amount of character development. And I think, like Ryan said, they did kind of catch on to that, oh, the Dark Knight did so well, let's dirty up Superman and see what happens, without taking into consideration the fact that Superman wasn't supposed to be dirty. Like, his, the core of his character is that he's this, like, outstanding person.
He's the Captain America of the DC.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, but Marvel's treatment of Captain America has been good, because he hasn't been, you know, too bright and shining, and he has had his complications, but they've been so well written and designed that, you know, they've been integrated more readily.
Right.
So, yeah. But as a warning, before we sort of dive into talk about the specifics of the movie, we are going to spoil everything, because this is a podcast and a...
it's been 2 weeks.
Talking about it. That's kind of why I record these now. Like, I could, you know, we kind of miss the wave of, like, everybody talking about everything, but I don't want everything to come out on the show and be like, hi, here's everything about the best movie of the summer. Yeah.
We don't know if it's the best movie of the summer yet. It's just the beginning of the summer. We got lots of good stuff coming out.
Yeah, and it seems to me that you just spilled the beans on how you feel how it shook out, Regina.
No,
yeah, a little bit.
She just basically put it all on the table. The best movie of the summer. Well, okay, so we know that you were happy.
Wow, this will be the last episode of this podcast, won't it? We don't even need to go to the rest of them because, hey, this one's the best.
I think the best episodes of this are when I hate the movies. Because there's only so much you can say when you're like, well, this was awesome, and this was awesome, and this was awesome, and this was awesome.
I don't think it was all a big awesome fest for Wonder Woman.
Yeah. No.
But I honestly think that it lived up to what I was expecting.
Yeah, I went in, like I said, with lower expectations, because I really did want to have kind of a reserved feel about it. And there were lots of reviews that came out that were talking about how great it was. And I just didn't want to be, I didn't want to hype myself to the point where I was expecting it to be great to be disappointed. So I was really went in with kind of a, okay, let's see how this goes. And then there were just so many things that blew me out of the water with it that, it's going to be hard.
Look at that. She can't even contain her excitement. She's like, I need to smile. Can't smile yet.
All right. I just can't help it.
All right. So before we go any further with all the things, before Regina has her love in on the Let's go with...
going to explode Wonder Woman all over the screen. Like, no one needs to see us anymore.
Let's talk about what we didn't like. And I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say what I think Ryan didn't like. And
hey, no. Don't speak for me. You speak for yourself, buddy.
Yeah.
No. I get to do this because I've talked with you about movies a lot, both when we're doing a podcast and just in general. And I think that you were unhappy with some of the CGI of the movie.
No.
There were a few scenes where
I didn't put that in the things I didn't like.
Oh wow, there were a few scenes in the Wonder Woman CGI that I thought were not quite up to par. They were just enough off that it jarred me out of, you know, suspension of disbelief.
Really? Like, do you have a specific example?
Mainly just when they were doing the fighting scenes, and you could tell when they would switch over from her to a CGI model of her in the shot. And, you know, it wasn't so bad that I was just like, oh, that's awful. I can't watch this movie
right.
anymore. It was just enough for me to go, that was CGI. But it didn't make me hate the movie or anything like that. I noticed it. That was probably one of my least favorite aspects of it. I also thought that it was interesting that at a few different times in the movie, it seemed like we were telling a flashback within a flashback within a flashback. I was like, I'm not sure if that is okay in the world of writing, but I'll let it go.
Flashback within a flashback within a flashback?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one that
starts,
was.
Oh, well, starts yeah, I mean, off I guess with her, she starts in modern day, and then
she flashes back to being on the island, and at one point her mother starts telling her about the story of Zeus and all that, and that's a flashback if we're going to take this all as part of, you
like
know,
a linear.
Ooh, yeah. Wonder Woman Inception sequel right there, guys. Wonder Woman Inception.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio is going to show up and hook her up to a machine. She's going to go back. She's going back.
So was there anything that you didn't like, Ray?
Yes. I have things listed right here on my screen.
Well,
that I
list
did not
them.
Like.
Go.
All right. Here Time's we go.
Right. No, go ahead.
So there was some, the CGI stuff didn't really bug me. I mean, I think I know what you're talking about, but it wasn't, they didn't look like rubber figures like they did in episodes 1 through 3 of Star Wars. You know, they did a decent job of pulling off the effects. So I wasn't really disturbed by that. So some of the things, like just plot stuff that really bugged me, like during that point in the movie when she's fighting Ludendorff on the control tower towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, before they kind of find out, you know, that he's not really the main villain. Nobody came over. Like, they're in a base full of people. And they're like blowing through walls and like stuff's exploding all over the place.
And they're in
Nobody.
The spot. And they're in the spotlights.
Yeah, in the spotlights. Like, nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody comes over. It's like, really? Is there war going on? Shouldn't that have gotten some suspicion somewhere? Just a little bit.
I thought that too. Just to be fair.
Oh god, that really drove me nuts. The soldiers embracing at the end, like when, you know, after the big fight at the end, and the soldiers, like the Americans and the Germans, are like, oh, we're all buddy-buddy now. Whatever. Whatever.
Well, if you suspend disbelief and believe that Ares really is somehow fomenting this conflict, then maybe they would. And there was actually times in World War One where enemy combatants would cross the line, like during Christmas, and exchange gifts and play soccer and stuff like that. So it's not totally outside of the realm of possibility, but it is kind of a neat little bow right at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
They didn't pull it off well. It just it seemed a little too, like all of a sudden everybody's on happy dust. It's like, well, hi, buddy. How's the wife?
I didn't really take it personally when you were shooting at me just a little bit ago.
No worries.
I know you were just doing your job.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not that soldiers don't do that, but it wasn't believable if you look at, you know, like other examples of that through movies in the in the history of movies.
Right.
Diana jumping off the tower at the end was incredibly cheesy and did not need to happen whatsoever. That was the worst Wonder Woman part of the movie. is when she like does that epic jump off, you know, like, oh, trouble's coming, you know, jumps off the tower at the end. I was like, what?
Oh, you mean like when they go back to modern time and she's kind of doing her last little bit of narrating and then she hears the bombs and then goes running out.
It didn't need to happen.
That didn't bother me because I feel like there were a few things that were really an homage to Linda Carter's Wonder Woman. And that was one of the moments where I felt like that was like,
I kind of felt like that was also an homage to a comic book panel or something.
Yeah.
Right. But what I'm saying, it didn't fit the rest of the movie. So, I mean, if you're going to do that, that's fine. But like, if you just throw it in there, then it has no context with the rest of the movie. Just to me, as an overall package.
Yeah.
Dr. Moreau and Ludendorff by Zelena Anaya and Danny Houston. I didn't like them as villains. They weren't believable. I never felt like they were dangerous. They just seemed... It wasn't surprising at the end when they weren't the main villain. It's just like,
I saw who the main villain was right off the get-go.
Yeah, so did I. I leaned over to Chris, and I'm like, he's the bad guy. And he's like, no, he's not. He thought it was the secretary, and I'm like, it's not the secretary. It's him.
And she was comic relief.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think Chris is really in tune to that kind of stuff.
I know.
Well, and you knew that he was going to – you knew that, you know.
He was just being too helpful.
Sir Patrick, the fact that he was I'm going to come find you at the bar and tell you to go on this adventure. I was like, yeah, he's a bad guy. But I think I called it before he did that. But
yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
So I didn't like them as villains. They just never seemed like, ooh, those guys are scary. I mean, and they were the main point of contention through the 3/4 of the movie. They had to get the gas that these people were making, but it never really seemed like...
There was never really any fight going on between them until the very end.
No. It just seemed like it wasn't fully there, that whole part of the storyline.
If anything didn't pay off, for me, that didn't pay off. Like, the gas story and the... Because I thought they were loading two planes, not just the one that Steve Trevor took down. And I don't know, I just felt like kind of along those same lines where it was what the whole movie was about, but it was the MacGuffin. It was what the movie was about, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was okay with them being a little bit more comic book in terms of their, like, they were more caricatures in terms of bad guys. But I think I knew that was going to be the case because I was so convinced it was going to be the general guy whose name I don't remember who played Lupin. And,
right. But there was so much, right. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to stop you.
No, that's okay.
There's just so many other good things that pointed it to make it more of a serious movie. And they didn't. Having the cheesy throwaway characters in there without giving them something, you know, for you to cling on to just didn't seem like, it's like, who are these people? And
yeah, I mean,
who are these people?
I kind of didn't like the fact that when she's fighting Ludendorff, who, I don't know, I never once believed that he was the Ares character.
Right. So, well, he just didn't have the presence, or I mean, if he was going to be a demigod, then that was not a demigod. It was interesting, you know, and it's kind of a suspension of disbelief to think that she wouldn't recognize, but she was portrayed as so naive, which I really liked, that she really just, you know, she just believed them when they said, this is the guy who you need to follow. No, she didn't use her own powers to kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and she didn't know her own powers yet. That was part of the building on the story. She was just figuring out that she was a god.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Going back to Ludendorff, though, when she's fighting him at the end, I found it completely implausible, you know, chemicals or no chemicals, that he would be able to stand up to a demigod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the story.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like...
In the tower that nobody could hear, apparently.
Yeah. There's no way that I felt like, even if he happened to hit Wonder Woman, that he would have even moved her. When you see her fighting the Darkseid or Darkseid in Superman versus Batman, Darkseid does something, I can't remember, and hits her hard with something, and she like literally puts her shield up and blocks it, but she slides like probably a good 50 feet, you know? So it's like the fact that this guy who just happens to be, you know, cranked out on some drugs, happens to land a lucky hit, and she actually gets thrown back. I was like, oh, come on. I watched her fight Darkseid before, and she, you know, stood up to a bigger punch than that.
Yeah, but I think that part of the storyline takes place after this. I mean, I think Wonder Woman, the movie itself, is kind of a prequel
to that
experience. So you don't really know, you know, what she's figured out from that. I mean, I totally agree with you. Not that I've seen the movie, but I understand your point. Yeah. But you don't know what happens to her between that point and that point. You know, maybe she doesn't know that she can stand up to, you know, human punches, and she doesn't really understand pain that well because she's lived in a paradise, you know, of Amazon women. She hasn't
really experienced it. Well, and nobody would have been able to fight her where she was either, really. Like,
well, I think
because her mom was the head honcho.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but she was being trained by her aunt, and I don't think for one second that when her aunt's training her that she's holding her punches.
No, that's not what I meant. What I meant more was that she wasn't in any threat or any real danger of being hurt while she was on the island.
Right.
Because one, they weren't really enemies, even if, you know, her aunt, whose name I'm about to look up so I can remember what she's called, was pushing her and trying to get her to the point where she did finally, you know, break and figure out that she has this like immense power that she didn't know. Even with that, she wouldn't have been fought in a way where she would have actually taken damage or actually been hit necessarily. Or at least it didn't seem so.
Yeah. Well, I think her aunt would have punched her and stuff.
Yeah.
Because her aunt was a full-on warrior.
Yes.
But, so I agree with you, Ride. The Ludendorff, and I actually felt like, what was her name? They call her Dr. Poison or something like that.
Dr. Poison, yes.
It was Dr. Moreau or Maru or...
Yeah, but their nickname was Dr. Poison.
Right, yeah.
Her nickname was Dr. Poison.
I actually liked her character because I kind of found her kind of tragic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they never really spelled it out. I mean, other than she's deformed, but there was something else underneath that I'd be willing to bet got left.
It was Dr. Maru. 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 Maru was her name.
Yeah, that's what, you know, that was one of my notes. Like, Dr. Maru, Ludendorff, and Sir Patrick, all three of those characters were never fleshed out. Like, you didn't care about any of them. I mean, the only thing I kept thinking the whole time is like, come on, the dude's Professor Lupin, pull out your wand, buddy, turn into a wolf, do something. So, you know, a couple of other things I put on that was the gas that he was getting hopped up on. No explanation of why that was even around. So, oh, look.
Well, there was. There was a very small, very quick explanation as to that gas that he was getting high on.
Kind of. She was like, explain. Oh,
I happen to make some of this. It's kind of.
Yeah, cool. And then she cracks it open. Like.
Yeah, she just said, I had a dream and I woke up and I made this for you.
But he never got upset about it. He just kept using it. Didn't ask any questions.
Well, no, of course not. Because that was part of who his character was, though. Like, she was his, you know, I don't even know what to call her. I was going to say muse, but that's not exactly what I'm going for, but it's kind of what I mean. Like,
I think he was her muse more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, she was, that's why I'm feeling like it's not the right word, but she was his, like, she was making the war for him. Like, that's why he kept saying, you have to make this work because this is what's going to make us great. So.
But it wasn't the gas that they were making.
Oh, no, that's the green gas. Oh, you mean that. Oh, I thought you meant the.
No, the stuff that was making him strong.
Yeah.
That she just surprised him with by cracking it open. You know, like it's Banaka or something here. You know, and he just goes nuts. And he's like, doesn't even question. He just keeps using it. It's like, if this guy was a serious, like, German officer, that's the thing. I mean, it just, like, he never really struck me as, like, a powerful guy, a smart guy, a dumb guy. He's just like, I'm a dude in a suit playing this part.
Well, I don't know. I disagree with that.
And I like that,
actor. I thought he did actually better than that. I thought that he was, I can see what you're saying in terms of him, like, being a caricature, and I think that was kind of, might have been intentional, I'm not really sure, and might have been part of, you know, to show you that it wasn't really about him or the poison or anything like that, that was the MacGuffin, like I said, for the story. But I disagree. Like, in his character, he was so power hungry, and he saw her and her abilities as his key to success, that I don't think he would have questioned anything she would have handed to him. She wouldn't have thought about it, and he wouldn't have shared it with his command, because they might have started using it, and he wanted an advantage over everybody. And I think that she was that key for him. And was kind of being like, yeah, give me a pocketful. I'll take them with me and use them whenever I can.
Right. Exactly. But if they didn't do that in the movie. I understand what you're saying, and yes, mm-hmm. that is what they should have explained in the movie, and they didn't do it. You know, I don't know. I mean, they couldn't devote a ton of time to it, but it was too, I don't know, too in the background. They didn't spell it out enough for me, and I didn't go to that movie to think a lot. So, I mean, it's not a thinker movie. It's a superhero movie. So if you're going to, you know, people aren't going to have an intellectual experience. So, yeah, I don't know. I just, for me, at the end of it, that was just like, I didn't really care about those guys at all.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably could have left 10 more minutes into the movie, and that would have given you a little more feel for all three of those characters.
Or had them in there less, and then built up Sir Patrick's character a little bit more. You know, why was he, you know, a couple things I thought, why was he close to Steve Trevor? You know, did he work for, what did he do in the British government? What was his role? Why was he able to go everywhere and do anything? You know,
who, Steve?
It's like,
no, Patrick.
No, Patrick.
Well, I was getting the sense that he was like either an MP or a member of like the Joint Chiefs of Staff or something like that.
Yeah, I was getting that, like, because he was running that meeting that they went into. I mean, that's the only time you see him in action. And he's trying to talk to him specifically, so.
Yeah.
But if he was such a big deal, and I mean, they definitely played to, you know, he's an important guy to Steve Trevor. But why is he an important guy to Steve Trevor? What is the, I don't know. It just didn't seem like, you know, Steve Trevor was a great character. Diana was a good character. And the rest of them were there. But, you know, he ends up being like the big villain at the end. And it just seemed like I didn't care about him so much at the end. It was just like, it was cool.
Well, I thought a part of with him is I'm not, and I only saw it once. I wanted to see it again before we recorded, and I just didn't have a chance to. Because when you have a small child, it is hard to get to the movies. I felt like he wasn't really gone. Like, she didn't really destroy him. And that he was going to be back. So I was figuring that his story was going to continue. Sir Patrick, Ares, that his story was going to continue. That this was not just her origin story, but his as well. Like the beginning of their conflict.
Well, there's a good way to find out is see if he's contracted with DC for any more movies.
Right. If he's going to be, you know,
that's
in the sequel that they've already announced. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they have to do a sequel to that.
We've had a success. Let's do it again.
Yeah. Let's just hope they can maintain it. We all know the ratio of successful, second movies is low.
One other thing on things I didn't like, they should have had the German speaking German with subtitles throughout the entire movie. It drove me a little crazy that, I mean, sometimes they had subtitles, but I think it would have made those parts in the film closer to a war experience if they were actually speaking German in those camps. Because they wouldn't have been speaking English that well in those camps.
Well, that was one of the questions I was going to have for you guys, because one of the critiques I had read said that they really did kind of a trite job or treatment of World War One. That it was really more of a background than it should have been if it was going to be in the story. And I wonder if that would have been one way maybe that could have been avoided. I don't know.
I don't know if Wonder Woman's story really actually starts back in World War One according to the comics or not. But I liked the fact that they started it in World War One because I've kind of been a World War One history buff for, I don't know, probably about a year and a half now. Since I listened to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History podcast for, he had a big 5-part or 6-part series on World War One called Blueprint to Armageddon. And you can't, in a 2-hour and 20-minute movie, you really kind of had to gloss over it, especially since you're worried about Wonder Woman and you're not really necessarily worried about
the setting.
And World War One was such a horrific war. I mean, when I was listening to that podcast, the things that I learned on that podcast, I mean, I knew it was horrible. You know, guys go over the top, run straight into machine guns, get mowed down, get stuck in barbed wire. But I mean, the depths of other horrible shittiness on that, on those battlefields is not to be believed. I mean, when he was reading things, excerpts and talking about things, I was just like, oh my God, I never even imagined that. I mean, he talks a little bit in the podcast about how Tolkien was in World War One. He said if Tolkien got an idea for Mordor anywhere, it had to be from the battlefields of World War One.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard that before too.
And I don't think that you could show World War One like it really was in a hero, you know, summer blockbuster popcorn movie. You just can't do it. It's too horrific. So I mean, as soon as I saw that they were doing it in World War One when I was watching the movie, because I wasn't 100% certain, I kind of got that idea when I saw the trailers and stuff, but I wasn't 100% certain. And then once I started seeing that, I kind of got the chills because I'm like, I don't know how much they're going to show and I don't know how much I want to see. So
I thought, and it was one of the things that this isn't my critique. Like I said, this is one that I read and something that I saw. And so it was one of the questions that I had about it and that I thought would be interesting to consider. I didn't feel that way. Perhaps especially because of my favorite moment of the film, which is when
when she goes over the top.
Yes, when she crosses no man's land and she, you know, and she's like, well, you may not be here for this, but I am, and I'm going to do this. And that moment, like, it was just, I thought it was a great, it showed the war, it showed what was happening, it showed the devastation, and it showed her stand up against it. Yeah. And I thought that that was amazing. And I thought just for that alone, putting it in that setting and that time frame was important, because you wouldn't have had any other war wouldn't have been the same.
Yeah.
The same field, literally the same battlefield. We wouldn't have had the same battlefield for her to literally climb up out of a trench and cross. Mm-hmm. So
one of the other things is too, Ryan, when you're thinking about the subtitles, going back to that, you got to remember that they established that Wonder Woman and all the Amazonians spoke like 200 different human languages. The one guy, Sammy, spoke a dozen languages or something like that when they introduced his character. What is his name? Is it Trevor? Trevor Rogers? No, I'm Christopher Pike's character.
Steve Trevor.
Steve Trevor.
Yeah.
Steve Trevor. Two first names. Hate that. At any rate, they established him as a spy that could actually infiltrate German areas. So we know he speaks German. I think the only two characters that we're not sure of are the Native American guide that they had and the Scottish sniper. So you got to imagine most of those scenes includes one or all three of those characters that speak presumably German. So there really isn't a reason to have subtitles for it, you know, unless you want them to speak German and the Germans to speak Germans, and then we're reading subtitles the whole movie. You know what I mean? I think the couple times that they did put subtitles up for German, if I remember right, it was because nobody else, none of those three people were in the scene. So I think they thought about it. So it wasn't like...
That's an interesting point.
I don't think they glossed over it necessarily.
Well, I'm not saying they gloss. I mean, it's fine. They do it all the time in movies where they just, you know, just to make it easier for the audience. But
yeah,
I don't know. I like the authenticity of, like, especially war movies where they have the Germans. You look at, you know, like I recently watched Inglourious Basterds again, and the way that they use, you know, the German officers speaking German in that movie, you know, though it was kind of lighthearted in the sense of the movie, they still had them speak German.
Yeah.
And people in there knew how to speak German too. And it just made it feel more like they were there in that time period of that, you know, that country. So that was my point.
All right. Anything else on your dislike list there?
I had a couple other things. The Steve Trevor sacrifice at the end and Diane's reaction was a little iffy to me. It seemed too much like Darth Vader at the end of episode 3. No! You know, where she just kind of... She does... I mean, I understand that she's upset. It just didn't... It seemed too abrupt. It just didn't seem like... It was like an overreaction acting moment. Not that she shouldn't have been upset, but it doesn't seem like she would make that reaction to me. Just my observation on that part.
I don't know. I think about that as... You know, short of her family and her friends and, you know, who she's been on the island with, she wouldn't have had any emotional connections to anyone else. And although they had only known each other for a couple of days, you know, her emotional attachment to him, her bond would have been akin to whatever first love you might have. So the intensity of a burning brighter and sort of more strongly or more intensely, I think, kind of follows with what she would have been going through. And I liked that it wasn't like, I liked the fact that the whole romance wasn't central to the story. Well,
yes and no. I mean, I kind of felt like they were kind of shoehorning it in. I mean, I get the fact that she's been, you know, on an island with nothing but women her entire life. And, you know, she is with a man and is curious and stuff like that. But I kind of felt like they pushed the whole relationship too hard, too fast. And I really didn't like the fact that that Wonder Woman had a sex scene with him after only knowing him for a day or two. Now, granted, we can toss that up to, we're going to go into battle tomorrow and who knows if we're going to live kind of thing. But at the same time, it's like going, I don't know. I don't feel like this needs to be here.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I see your point, and yes, it didn't need to be in the movie, but you know, it didn't. She still has those feelings, so it would make sense that, you know, her spending that much time with somebody and that, you know, it's been in movies forever. Like, you're in an intense situation with another person.
Yeah.
You know, sex happens. It just that's just, you know,
that's,
because
that's
you're
in the movies.
Yeah. It is a rule. It's like the emotional turmoil is just so much that is like the release.
Well, and there was a fair amount of hesitation, and it was very slow. It didn't like.
I would have rather actually seen the tension all the way through the movie and had it been unrequited love. I think that would have been more important to me.
Yeah, I can see that, but I also kind of go with the analysis that Ryan just gave in terms of like the heightened, because I mean, they have the whole scene where they're dancing and it snows for the first time. I mean, the number of like new experiences that she had with Steve Trevor as opposed to everybody else that she had known in her life, not just because he was a man, but just in general, I think it just followed for me. It just made sense. And I thought it was treated a lot better than I've seen it in other of her origin stories and in the comics, and kind of the feeling I always had about it from Linda Carter's Wonder Woman and everything else was like, she just dropped everything and fell in love with him. Like as soon as she saw him. And that was always the kind of like overarching thing. And she doesn't even really know that she loves him when he says, I love you to her. And he's going off to kill himself or to, you know, to sacrifice himself for, to kill, you know, to bring the plane down. Like she doesn't.
I don't think she knows heard him. I think her ears are still ringing from that artillery shell. Because remember, when the scene first happens, he's like saying all this stuff, and all you're hearing is the muffling and the whining.
Well, they replay it at the end though, where she kind of decodes that whole scene. Like they redo that scene where you actually hear him.
Yeah, at the end, and I thought that I don't know. I didn't interpret that way. I had a couple of other scenes with Julie that she interpreted completely different than me as well. So it could be. I thought that more as like she heard him but didn't feel what she was hearing until she could reflect on it at the end when she was out of sort of battle mode. And I don't know if that's from the sonic boom or not being able to hear the ringing in her ears. I'm not sure.
They basically portrayed it just like, you know, what you would experience after you've had a big explosion go off next to you and your ears are ringing.
Shell shock.
Yeah.
Sounds muffled and everything like that.
That's, yeah, that's but the thing the thing that Julie was picking up on, and I don't know what you guys thought about this, but there was the moment so early in the film. We haven't talked about the beginning of the film. It's interesting that you guys jumped into the whole the climax.
Well, all the stuff I didn't like was at the end.
Which is fine. But so the scene where they're in the alleyway and they are cornered, and she uses her bracers against the guns. Like, I took that as the first moment that she recognized that she could fight the bullets with her metal.
Mm-mm. She realized that because she stops one of the shots from, I think, hitting Steve when the Germans show up on the beach. She throws out her arm and stops a bullet with
her. Did she?
Yeah, yeah.
Because she stops and, like, catches the bullet in her hand when it's in the glove.
No, she doesn't catch the bullet. Steve catches it. He's like...
And he's like, hot.
Because Julie's critique was that they didn't establish that well enough that she could stop the bullets and that all of a sudden she was.
Maybe she just missed it on the beach.
Yeah, because she had a pretty good, decent fight scene with the Germans on the beach.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's my second favorite part of the movie was that fight scene.
Well, let's go back a little bit here. Ryan, are you done with your laundry list of hates?
Hey, I have an equal laundry list of likes, all right?
Okay,
don't be hating. Okay. Well, the only other notes I would have on it, I mean, since you asked.
Jesus, you're killing me here, Smalls.
Why is I don't know how you pronounce her name. Is it Hippolyta? What was her mom's name?
Hippolyta.
Mm-hmm. Played by Connie Nelson.
Hippolyta.
Talk about typecast, man. She was like the exact same character in Gladiator, except for not the mother of a god. But and just something that kept ringing through my mind throughout the entire movie, just I kept hearing Winston go, "If someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes." Because she found out she was god and was like, yeah, there was that. All right, so that's all my other things, and I have a list of likes. So we'll get to that.
All right, I'll shut it down. No, it's fine. You liked the movie. You had valid points. I'm not going to say you didn't have valid points. I'm just saying that I feel like we're all like, yes, we love this movie. Let's pick the thing to pieces. Like,
yeah, that's a little how I'm feeling. That's why I was trying to drive away from it, but that's okay.
Well, we're gonna drive away from it now, Regina. Actually, no, we didn't hear what you didn't like about it.
Nothing. She liked it all.
I pretty much Ryan hit on the couple of things that I didn't like, which was definitely not the laundry list of his things. That went way deeper into what he didn't like than I did. And like I said, I really did want to see it a second time so I could kind of, because I saw it opening night, and I will fully admit that there was quite a rush of emotion that went with the entire viewing of it.
Oh yeah, I agree.
That I just, I mean, I rode for days after having watched it. I mean, even now I can still think about some of the scenes and get choked up just from the significance of what I was seeing on the screen, both culturally and personally for me, just to see her be that character and to be treated well, because, you know, there was so much that could have gone wrong.
Well, let's jump back to the beginning of the movie then. One of my favorite things about the movie was the little actress who played little Diana.
I thought she was adorable.
Mm, yeah.
The whole scene, the whole origin of seeing her as a little girl, like, you know, and I couldn't tell if it was just really well done or if it's just the fact that I have a little girl that made it like...
No, I think it was done well.
Yeah, I think so too.
It was done well, but they were also playing to you as well.
Well, I have no doubt about that. I mean, the whole movie was playing to me too. You know, I am the demographic, right? You know, me and a lot of other women. That's one of the things about Wonder Woman, that her icon status reaches to lots of women. But I just loved her character as a little girl, and the fact that she was like, I'm ditching school and I'm going to go see what they're doing in the fighting. I'm going to sneak around. I'm going to do this even though I'm not supposed to.
She very much reminded me of my niece when she gave her little mischievous smile.
My
niece does the same thing.
Yeah.
So I
see that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have one that makes that same face too. So yeah. That was great. I loved that. The interactions. So
what did you think of getting to watch the Amazons fight? Like when they were both training and then when the Germans came on the beach?
Me or Ryan?
No, you. I'm asking you.
Oh, I I was absolutely blown away. I loved why the training was one thing. Like, the training was fun, and to watch, and I don't know how you guys, I didn't recognize Robin Wright. Like, I had
Neither did I.
Until the credits rolled, and I was like, where the hell was Robin Wright? Like, what?
Really?
Yeah, like, seriously, didn't even, like,
I picked her right away.
Well, did you know she was in the movie? Because I didn't know she was in the movie.
So I didn't know she was in the movie until she came up, and I was like, "Hey, look at that, it's Robin Wright."
Yeah, no, I didn't recognize her. I didn't put two and two together until I got home, and I finally let myself look at Twitter, because for like 2 days I couldn't look at Twitter or any, you know, very brief social media visits, because I was like, "No one is spoiling this for me."
I don't think anybody could have spoiled it for you. I really don't.
Well,
they could have, like, given you the script and be like, sweet, that was a great movie.
Need I remind you of how badly I had Star Wars spoiled for me?
Yeah, my wife had the same thing happen.
Yeah, like, it colored the Force Awakens. Where I read a comment on a parenting article where somebody had put in, you know, the spoiler, you know, Kylo Ren kills Han Solo.
And spoilers, everybody.
Oh, right. Well, I don't feel bad. That movie's been out for 2 years, and I spoiled this. We talked about it 2 years ago. So, you know, if you're listening to the podcast or watching the show and haven't seen Star Wars, I'm really sorry. But I saw it before the movie had even come out here.
Mm-hmm.
So it was out in Europe, and somebody literally trolled it anyway. So, and it changed my whole view of the movie, because I was waiting for the whole movie for him to die. Like, so I'm watching everything going.
Yeah. My wife was the same way.
Yeah. Don't drink that. Like,
when they got out on the catwalk before he actually did it.
Oh yeah.
Heather was like in tears. I'm like, what the hell's going on
here? I was crying too. And Julie's sitting next to me. She's like, oh no. Like, she knew, because I was like, and they started like panting. And I'm like, oh no, it's coming. And no, it's coming. And she's like, what is going on? And she knew I had seen a spoiler. So she figured that was not good. So I kind of spoiled it for her. But at least she got it spoiled like minutes before it happened. Didn't watch the whole movie going, what's happening? So that's what I was wanting to avoid, was anything that was going to be that like little snippet that just ruined the whole thing.
I don't think you could have with that movie. I really don't.
I don't think you could have either. Now that I've seen it, I don't feel like anything could have ruined it because of the way the story evolved. Because for me, it was much more about the emotion involved in the storytelling and what I was seeing, especially in that fight scene where the Germans come on the beach and Robin Wright goes out on the horse just with that smile on her face and the power in her. And, I still get chills just talking about it. Just seeing that was
I thought the archers rappelling off of the cliff and swinging while they're shooting their bows.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty badass.
Yeah, that was amazing.
There's a movie you don't see every day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just the power that they had, and the watching the kind of come so quickly together and just be ready to fight was just astounding.
Yeah,
I cried, and that was the first of many times I cried, was when Antiope, is that how you say it? I'm horrible with names, especially Greek.
Yeah,
Antiope.
Robin Wright's character.
That's why I said that before.
The sister, the trainer.
The aunt, that when she died, like, was the first of many times I'd cried through it. And I'm like, oh, great. So we're 10 minutes in the movie, and I'm already doing this.
She had to die, or the mom had to die. One of the two had to have been
I knew her mom had to die. Diana. I mean, there was no way that her mom was going to die, because she's just too important in the story later on. Yes.
Just fess up. You were tearing up as soon as you saw little Diana running around.
I got a little weepy there, yes. I didn't actually cry, but I did get a little, like, I got verklempt.
Mm-hmm.
I was verklempt for that. But I didn't actually have tears until Robin Wright died. And then in the No Man's Land, where she goes up out of the trench and crosses, that was, like, tears, like, streaming down my face. And then I cried at the end a little bit, but not to the degree I did for those two. Those were the two scenes that, like...
So let's go back over to Ryan. Are any of your notes about what you liked in the opening part of the movie when they're, I can't remember the name of the island, whatever it is, starts with an M.
Themyscira. Yeah. It's actually a T. It's Themyscira.
Oh, okay.
Themyscira.
It sounds like
I put a note. that, you know, I liked the backstory. I liked how they, just the overall, how they laid out the movie, not, you know, the nitpicky character stuff that I mentioned earlier. And yes, it was a long list, but, you know, it really was not, you know, it wasn't like my entire thought on the film. It's just little nitpicky things on there. It didn't ruin the movie for me, but I love the backstory. I mean, all the stuff you guys just talked about was amazing. I thought it was really well done how they, you know, brought the real world into the island. I thought it was really cool how they kind of explained the island in the first place. I thought they did that really clever, you know, in like bringing the gods into it and stuff like that, and the mythology of that situation. I thought was really cool, kind of educational. It made me think a lot as they were doing that part of the story. I mean, just that whole island scene was cool. I remember thinking a little something about like the plane coming through the bubble, and then like the ships going through the bubble, and then the full-on war type thing.
Just exploding into the...
Yeah, just kind of like, whoa. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I liked about the beginning part. Do you want me to give you my whole list? Or no, I felt like I hijacked the beginning of this whole podcast of my negativity. I'm afraid to open my mouth now.
No, not at all. You didn't. It just was like, you know, we agreed, we liked it, and then you were like, and now... let me read from my list of grievances.
Well, I literally like pulled out my phone during the credit roll and like started making notes, because when we did podcast, I didn't really take notes, and we did it a couple weeks after again, and I was struggling a little bit
to remember
exactly what it was, and so this time I made immediate notes of my thoughts, and that's what I'm going off of here.
But I made a point of actually going and seeing it day before yesterday, so I would be kind of fresh.
That would be fresh.
Oh, I see. Running away. You yellow bastard. All right. So, I mean, just throughout the entire... I'm just going to read my list. That's all there is to it.
Here he goes, Regina. Hold on to your hats.
A really deep dive.
The comedy elements were great through the entire movie. None of them felt too forced or cheesy. I thought they hit the comedy just right. The whole thing. And I was really afraid after seeing the trailer so many times, the different trailers, that the secretary was going to ruin it for me. But her lines were not, I mean, because they really used her a lot in the trailers to like do the comedy relief.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about like, the trailers and her like making little comments and stuff.
Did you recognize the actress, Ryan?
Yes.
It was
Lucy Davis.
I mean, she looked familiar to me.
Shaun of the Dead, Dav's girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. She's in The Office as well.
Yeah. The British version? Or was she in the American version?
The British version, I believe.
Yeah. So the comedy elements were great. I enjoyed that thoroughly. There were some really good chuckles, which pretty much led me into really loving Diana's reactions to the man's world situations that she ran into. Like,
oh God, can we talk about the scene where she's trying the clothes on?
Oh God, that was so great. Like all of it was just great. Her face, whenever anybody made some sort of sexist remark, it was just like, dude, I am going to haul off and beat you. It's just like she didn't get it. Like she was so naive to that whole situation. It's like her face was just like slapped every time somebody did it.
Yeah.
Not like somebody who grew up in that world was just kind of like, you know, take it type thing. But
right.
Just those reactions were priceless.
I loved her reaction when the general said something along the lines of, "My dear, it's a soldier's job to die," and that's actually, if I recall correctly, a quote from an actual general during World War I.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the fact that they threw it in there, but I loved the fact that she was like, no, you know, what kind of man sends millions to die while he sits in his office, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was
about real world situations there.
It was a nice little social commentary.
to have that
in there
throughout the ages, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Always topical.
The look of the film's environment was believable. You had mentioned the World War One scene of her crossing No Man's Land. I love that scene just for the environment. The way that they pulled that off, I thought was really well done. Not that I'm not a huge like World War One history buff. I know more stuff about World War Two, but the trench scenes are just iconic to World War One. It's like if they're ever going to show World War One, there's some scene of like the ladder going up the side of the trench, like every time. Like, I think about that scene from, there's like, they mentioned it in Hellraiser. Like, when they talk about, you know, him, like, they show that scene. What was it, Secretariat? Was that the Steven Spielberg horse movie?
The horse one, yeah.
I didn't see it, but I remember seeing the trailer, like, the shot of the trench. So the trenches were just, I just was like, man, that is World War One. When they showed that scene, I was like, that was really cool. But other than the army base, where apparently nobody can hear fighting, you know, just the different locations were really well done, I thought. Even, you know, from the island to the war scenes to the city in that time period, I thought was really cool. The costumes, the cars, all that fun stuff. The cast of characters were great. I mean, Chris Pine did awesome. Robin Wright did awesome. Saeed, I can't really pronounce his last name, but the guy, who played Samir, Charlie, Ewan Bremmer.
Oh, yeah.
For people who have seen Trainspotting.
Yeah.
Just his character in Trainspotting. I mean, the guy is a little typecast because, I mean, he's just the same in all his movies, but I love his characters. So it was cool to see him. At least he had
legitimate reason for being that way in this, like having suffered from legitimate shell shock.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know,
he was in, he was in a scene in Black Hawk Down. Like, he was one of the soldiers in Black Hawk Down who lost his hearing from, you know, artillery burst. And, like, he kind of went all weird on that one, too. Yeah. Or, no, yeah, it was the guy shooting the gun next to his face. You're right.
Yeah, twice. it's like...
Twice, yeah.
Man, you can't do that!
So, anyway, I love seeing his character just because I like him as an actor. The Chief, I thought, did a really awesome job, like, being... You know, not being like a typecast Indian, but being, you know,
not stereotypical.
Yeah, not the stereotypical Indian. He just, you know, the guy. But he still had this
social commentary of like, well, they took my land away, and she's like, who did?
Right,
like his people.
I thought that was a great line.
It was perfect. Like the execution, the writing, the like staging of it. It was like, look at how much you said in 15 seconds.
Right.
You know, and
the writing was very smart for like the majority of the characters. It was just, and that was one of the great things about that movie. It didn't feel, it felt like there was love in the script. It didn't feel like it was just, let's just put words on the page.
Yes.
You know, there's going to be action. Who cares?
That's always what I come back to when the heart is in it. That's why like the first Star Wars movie, the first one he made, always stands out to me because there was so much heart in it. Not with the revision and the extra, like, you know, scenes that he cut in later because he's like, oh, I didn't get to tell the story I wanted to tell.
20 years.
Yeah.
I didn't put enough characters in this scene.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, not that, but, like, the first original, the one that we watched when it first came out, you know, had that heart. Like, they were creating the special effects that we know now. So, you know, that energy, I think, really marks a film. And you're right. I feel like it had that same energy where it had that same, like, everybody, I think, understood what it meant and what it could mean if it was done well. And so it all came together. Like I said, you know, costumes and music and writing and, you know, the acting, at least for the main characters and for that, the group, like you said, of the Chief and Charlie and Samir all together with, you know, just this hodgepodge of people brought together who can actually, like, effectively fight this thing. Like, I don't know. I just love that part.
Right. I did read another review where people didn't like those three guys just because, you know, for one of the same reasons why I didn't really like Sir Patrick's characters, like, you know, where'd these guys come from in Steve Trevor's universe type thing. But since they were the comedy element of it, it was just kind of nice. It was fun to have them around.
Yeah.
You didn't really question them too much. They were just war buddies at that point.
I think it was interesting that he, you know, he had all these contacts and you kind of get the, you know, the loose idea of him as a spy. And having worked with them previously. And they do give nods at least to that as he's like pulling the group together and he's introducing them to her, where he's like, well, this guy does this and this guy does that. And this is why, you know, I've collected this motley group of characters. And then they all had their moments where they were, their skills were important.
I don't know. I don't
think. Well, and the part that, oh, sorry.
Train spotting guy had his scene, because I think wasn't he pretty much, you know,
not in the killing, the time? But you have to have the person who glues the people together.
Yeah, and you felt like he was right. The guy.
I felt like he was. I think that was part of his role, and I think that's what she acknowledged when she said, "Well, you know, if you weren't with us, who would sing?" Like,
right, he was the lovable character. You know,
yeah, she called him out for that, and because she did, that's what gave him that role. Appointed it to him, because she could have been like, I'm given her history and given her training, she could have been like, yeah, you're useless, like, what are you doing here? But she didn't, and which was, you know, what her mother kept saying to her when she was training,
mercy, basically,
don't lose your kindness, don't you lose your gentle heart, you are so much more than just the fighting. And that was one of the moments where I think it really solidified her as a character who was more than the fighting, because she could have just been that, and then it would have been, you know, not what it was.
Yeah. It would have been the other DC movies.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It would have had that. It would have fallen flat like that. But it rounded around.
The scene of those three characters when they're all fighting like side by side on the airstrip or the army base at the end that I didn't like so much. You know, they had the point where she stops and is looking at all the mere mortals fighting, you know, this fight, and just the emotion of that scene was a good reason to have those guys in the film.
Right. Because she has the emotional attachment to them.
Right. Like, she is like, this is what we're fighting for moment.
Right.
Type thing. This is why we fight, you know, type line.
That's important.
But you didn't, I mean, and going back to my earlier gripe, you didn't really get that with Sir Patrick. Like, you never had that like warm, fuzzy feeling for the guy before he turned into a demon. or a demigod, but
demigod, demon, in there.
Yeah. the good balance of the story, like I mentioned, with Goodheart. I just thought the way that they, you know, and we talked about it with our last one with Guardians, just the way that they weave the emotion with the humor.
Right.
I felt really the nice same job way. Of that.
Yeah, it was interesting because as I was thinking about talking about this today, and I was thinking about our last show talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm like, wow, these are gonna be like. There's so many similar things to say because they really did like figure out that kind of storytelling where it has enough pace where they take at least with, you know, the vast majority or with many of the characters take the time to have the scenes where they can actually develop. I love the scene in the boat that neither one of you have talked about when they're riding in the boat and they're like, you know, talking about sex.
Yeah, but not.
Oh. But not. I loved it. I thought it was great. It turns out it was all improvised.
Well, I did like that scene, and that's why I didn't like the fact that they fall into bed, like, whatever it is, a night or two later. I mean, we don't know.
It wasn't a night or two later. It was further along in the movie than that, I think.
Well, actually, the whole movie seems to...
It was like 3 days.
In a very short span of time.
What do you guys know?
but
yes, I agree. That was a really cool scene of just them...
Yeah.
You know, her trying to figure out, I mean, it just plays to her being naive to, you know, what he grew up as with his morals and her thinking, what's the big deal? You know, type thing. We're just laying next to each other type thing. So,
yeah. And I liked that scene. And I liked the other kind of scenes where they were, it's clear that they have chemistry, but they're not quite comfortable around each other, or at least he's not comfortable around her. I think she's more fine with it than he is.
Right. To go back to the scene where they're trying to find her clothing to make her look less conspicuous.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you're supposed to make her look less, you know, he doesn't even know what to say. He's like, duh, duh, you're supposed to make her look less, you know, like how do you take this and make it look less when it's,
you know, I thought it was kind of ridiculous that they're just she's just walking around with that sword and that shield and just hands it off to his secretary. And it's like, and nobody's batting an eye that these people are just wandering around with a sword and shield. I mean, I know it's like, you know, the early 1900s, but I'm pretty sure that they weren't just okay with people wandering around with swords.
Yeah, I had that moment too. I was like, or when she was, you know, walking through with, even with the cape on, the black cape she had over her, you know, her armor. But I mean, it was a great homage to Linda Carter, where they had her put the glasses on, you know, disguise her by putting glasses on. She's like, yes, because that makes her instantly not beautiful. As Ed said. You know, so it was like, yeah, you know, that idea and where she's trying to kick in the long skirts, because the critique of always like, why is she wearing clothes that look like this? Well, because she can actually fight in them and she can't fight in these clothes. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I'm trying to not be quite as like insanely gushy about how much I love touring scenes. So.
You can be as gushy as you want, girl. You've been waiting for this a long time.
I know.
I've been waiting for this for a long time. And that was so, like, you know, and I've said this in other contexts. I don't think I've said it on the show before, but, you know, with my mom passing away and the, like, tie to Wonder Woman, I really wish she would have seen this movie. Like, she would have been, like, really appreciative of this story. Yeah. So I was like, oh, God. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I really loved about the movie was that, I mean, clearly there is a feminist bent to the movie, but what I loved about it was it wasn't man-hating. It wasn't
at all.
There was no misandry. It was like literally, you know, here's a person that's grown up in this society that's all women, and she doesn't know anything about this stuff. And yeah, whenever she encounters it, it's like a slap to the face, and that's enough. You get it from there. Mm-hmm. You don't need any kind. There's no, you know, proselytizing or anything like that. It's just like, you know, it happens here, it happens there, and you get it. She's like, you know, basically fed up with it until the, you know, the scene where she's like yelling at them, you know, how can you send millions to die?
Right.
You know, knowing they're going to die, you know, and I think it really worked to that buildup of that. And it made those other scenes where, you know, you see their, you know, misogyny or whatever you want to call it, it made those scenes play up to something more than it just being about, you know, gender politics or anything like that. It made it about people dying, the difference between people living and people dying.
Yeah.
Well, it just made it about people.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Yeah. And I love the fact
humanity,
that
there you go.
I love the fact that her whole job, what she came to do, was save humanity.
Yeah, exactly. And she was like absolutely on point about that, regardless of the distractions. And, you know, every time somebody told her, you can't do that, she's like, I'm going to end this war. I'm going to kill Ares and I'm going to end this war. And it was interesting because I was, like I said, I called that it was going to be Lupin's character from the beginning. But poor guy, we're still calling him Lupin. Like, I'm never.
I'm glad I put that bug in your ear.
Oh, I had it. I was calling him Lupin through the whole. You know, every time I've talked about it, I'm like, yeah, the guy, the Lupin guy, the bad guy.
He hasn't been in enough movies to not be called Lupin.
That's yeah, exactly. Well, and he can't be like that kind of a character, like in that story, and not.
I mean, he looks the exact same way too. It's like the same brown suit.
It's the same suit. It was the same clothes. He's the same disheveled hair and like face. You know, like they just They
shave the mustache or something.
They could have, like, you know, angled him at least a little differently for that. But where was I going with that? Oh, that was what were we just saying? Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
The fact that she was on point for saving the world—that was her.
Yes, point. Yes. That I wondered, given the power of metaphor, like because Steve was like, that isn't a real thing. You're not just going to kill one man and end the war. And she's like, yes, I am. But, you know, that could, in terms of a metaphor, be true. So it could have been that she could have just killed him and ended the war, which it ended up that being like, you know, the myth that she was living was true. But it could have just been as easily have been that she just killed a man who just represented the war powerfully enough to end it. I thought it was that play between like the mythology being real that she was living and it being a metaphor was a really nice sort of part of the writing that you could kind of go with. Like, this isn't real. Like, I understand you think this is real, but it's not. And then, but it was. So.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you look at like almost any World War II movie, it's like, you know, there's always almost a line in there. It's like, well, if I kill Hitler, the war is going to stop.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, it's.
Which it's not.
That's played out before, which it wouldn't.
No.
You know, there's still other people. Somebody else would just take up the mantle, you know, type thing. So, I mean, I guess unless you're a god. then it's right. a little harder to rise above that.
And the mantle's a little harder to pick up.
Yeah,
and I did like how they played with that. Like, you know, you were never quite sure if she was just delusional or
right.
Or
you that's know, what that's what I was trying thing. To say. Like the pull between the story being a story and a metaphor and being true. The myth, yeah. the myth being true.
And I, you have to like, when I was you know when you're watching the movie, you have to like well. The island was true.
Right.
Wonder Woman is true. So yeah. if these things are true, then Ares is somewhere in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you said, I pegged that guy for, you know, I didn't think he was necessarily Ares. I just thought he was a bad guy somehow. And then when he shows up at the end of the movie, you're like, oh, of course he's Ares. But
right. But, yeah, I leaned over to Chris and I'm like, see? He's like, yeah. Because he hates that I have that. One of the first shows we watched was Farscape, and I called like the main like conflict of the story like two or three episodes into it, and he's like, how did you do that? And I'm like,
I used to do that to Ryan. He didn't like it very
much. Drove me nuts. Shut up.
Well, you would like showed me what was it, The Usual Suspects, and you know like I wasn't going to figure it out or something, like 15 minutes in, I was like, oh, Kevin Spacey's the dude. Then you're just like, no, he's not.
Yeah, Chris did that. I showed him Angel Heart, which is one of those, like, you meet the bad guy at first, and then they spend the whole movie trying to find him. And Chris is like, oh, he's a bad guy, isn't he? And I'm like, damn it. Oh, it just became irrelevant.
But to your guys' point, they would have sold the, you know, the delusion of Ares thing a little bit better had Dr. Maru and Lindendorf been better villains.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If you could have believed that they were evil enough to be the main villain of that movie, it would have been more of a surprise at the end to see Ares show up.
I guess so, but I didn't think that they were as thin as you think they were or you experienced them to be. Ludendorff and Dr. Moreau is somebody else. That's actually another fictional character.
And he has an island too.
He does. Maru is the cat on YouTube.
So
there's a lot of cats on YouTube.
Yeah, well, no, we Maru is a very specific cat on YouTube. Like, it's got a whole channel, like famous internet cats. Somebody listening knows what I'm talking about.
All right. Reel it back in here. So, do we have any final thoughts about Wonder Woman?
Yes, that's what I was going to say too.
Well, I got to keep you guys on point. What's up? What's up, Ryan? You tell us.
The one bullet point in the likes I didn't get to say, so I'm going to say it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go back to your list. Yes.
Let's go back to my list. It's a bold point.
It's a bold point. It's a bold statement. Tell us.
Right. The other point I was going to make is the way that Diana finds out that she's a god and her internal struggle throughout the entire movie was extremely well done.
Yes.
It didn't, you know, they did not, like, I think Mark was pretty much making the point. It's just like, it kind of kept you wondering, like, what was reality and what wasn't reality through the entire movie. Like, they didn't spoon feed that to you. Like, the audience all knew, but we were just waiting for her to find out, you know, type thing. It's just kind of like, we weren't quite sure what, you know, because I don't read the comics, so I don't know the backstory of Wonder Woman, like, over here. But, so I thought that was really great, because I was...
Show them.
You should have. Yeah, where's the Wonder Woman toys? That you missed that one.
I did,
Just the way that she finds out, it was nice that we got to go on that same ride with her character,
mm-hmm.
and not just have to wait for her to find out at the end. It's like, oh... Yeah, we've known since the beginning, lady. Jeez. You know, type thing. So I thought that was really cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
So to wrap it all up in a little bow, I'm going to say solid BB+, as far as like overall feelings.
Well, we were doing thumbs last time. So, I mean,
yeah.
Were you with thumbs? Like 1.5 thumbs?
I guess that would be this. I don't know.
Right.
But that'd be the thumbnail.
What about you, Regina?
Like, to sum it up, I would say, as a woman, it was really exciting to finally have a character who was so well designed and well thought out. It was amazing to see characters fight with outstanding skill in, like I said, that opening scene. And to see Diana take her belief and her power in humanity and let that drive every decision that she made. Regardless of what she was told she could or couldn't do, she just took that belief and made it her reality. And that just made it, you know, I don't care about the other characters.
So many thumbs.
Well, and that's why
that's two thumbs up, like, undoubtedly. Yay.
Okay, but if we're going to be honest and rate the entire movie, it wasn't all sunshine and roses. That's all I'm saying. I totally agree with you. I thought the Wonder Woman character herself was A+ all the way. Yeah. As well as Steve Trevor. I thought Chris Pine did a really nice job.
Yeah, it was good too. Yeah, absolutely. But even, you know, I Robin Wright's character was fantastic. And there were so many little, you know, things that were just great about it. I still think that all of that overshadows potentially stereotyped or cardboard villains who I didn't think were quite as stereotyped.
But they were still there.
As Ryan thinks that they were. I didn't think they were as objective as not objective.
I don't know. They were just
objectionable. Sorry, I had to find my word. Objectionable as Ryan did. So
I think they were just a hair's breadth away from looking for a moose and squirrel.
Right? Exactly.
But
so much of it is so much more important.
That's great. That's a good way of putting it.
All of the other
stuff is so much
more important than that. So.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm going to give it a thumb and a half.
This is the official summary.
I love your interpretations of this. I'm hoping nobody watches this without the sound turned off, because they'll just...
They'll be like, what the hell's going on?
What is going on? Are they making their own geeky gang signs? Like,
I felt like the movie basically was the window into Wonder Woman's world, that I didn't feel like it was hung up on all the baggage that Zack Snyder's been trying to drop into the other movies that he's been involved in so far. You know, it definitely had its dark and gritty tinge to it. But you know, there was a lot of joy and joie de vivre, you know, especially in the opening scenes where you're getting to see little Diana and you're getting to see her grow up on the island and all that sort of stuff. I thought that the battle scenes with her in them were great. We didn't even touch on when she goes to actually get the Germans out of the village that they go to after she, you know, goes over the top.
Oh, right.
And that fight scene was phenomenal as well. I mean, I think all of the battle scenes were really great. I think that maybe the Ares battle scene was a little too over the top for me.
I felt like if there was any time that I felt like it kind of dragged a little bit, it was there, where I was like, I could move along from this now. They're two demigods fighting each other. Of course, is going to be terrible and big and explosive.
Yeah. But other than that, I thought all the battle scenes and fight scenes were great. And like I said, it's definitely, you know, a pro woman movie and go Wonder Woman. But I don't feel like it's stepping on men to get there. It has its message and it rings loud and true. And otherwise, you know, it's a great popcorn movie too. You can just sit back and enjoy it for what it is.
Cool. Very good. Well, thanks guys for watching with me and hanging out here to talk about it. For those of you watching or listening, please, we'd love to hear what you guys think. So head on over to thegeekembassy.com and leave us a comment about your thoughts about the Wonder Woman movie. Maybe in particular about this little disagreement that Ryan and I have about how cardboardy were the not really bad guys.
I could see your disappointment if I would have said that Wonder Woman was cardboardy, and
oh,
she was
God,
not.
Oh my God, I would have, you know, you are, you know, half a state away from me right now, but I would have found a way to choke you had you said Wonder Woman was cardboardy. And I'm not disappointed, like, I can understand that. I guess I just think it doesn't take away from the movie as much as you do. So
here's a question for you, Regina. I know you're trying to wrap it up, but I do have a question for you that is important. at any point in time, was it possible that you could have hated this movie? I mean, not like if it was like if they did make Diana worse, not that I mean,
if it had been anything like every other DC movie that's come out in the last 10 years, I would have hated it and I would have cried for other reasons than the ones I was crying. Because the awe,
get this onion out of my face, get the onion out of my face.
Yeah, you know, yeah, the you know, the reasons why I was emotionally attached to it the way that I was because they didn't do what they normally do, and so they're you know, they're. I very much could have, and I do feel like I could be objective. You know, and I will admit when I'm not, and I will admit, fully admit, that there is a lot of emotion and a lot of history, you know, with the character that I'm taking into this. And maybe that did give it the half a thumb greater rating that I'm giving it in our discussion here. But I still think that in the overall, for the movie, the things that are communicated through it with, like Mark said, a feminist agenda that was empowering to everyone watching it, I think just surpasses the fact that, you know, two of the bad guys weren't as fleshed out or as, you know, thoughtfully written as they might have been.
And I still think
they probably, movie.
What?
I still think that those two probably have more story behind them that was left on the cutting room.
Well, and she didn't die. She didn't die. Yeah. And it, and you don't know the, and I know you guys don't read the histories, but Dr. Poison was the first bad guy that Wonder Woman fought in the first series of comics.
Oh.
So there is a lot of history there. And she wasn't, she didn't, she took mercy on her. She didn't kill her. She let her escape. So the likelihood that she could come back, I think, is pretty high also. So.
Well, and she wasn't really, I mean, I think Mark said that she was tragic, you know, so it didn't, I will say this for her character, that they left enough there to, I mean, it was a disappointment because, yeah, it would have been nice to like, because it, she seemed like a really good actress and the character seemed really interesting, but they just, they stepped on her to get to the guy that wasn't the actual villain. And it just, it would have been nice for her to be in there without the guy.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't. I thought it was just gonna. She was gonna be the maniacal, but you know, in a movie that is kind of trying to communicate feminist, you know, maybe I don't know. I'm not gonna go there. I'm gonna stop. I'm not even gonna say that because I haven't fleshed that thought out, and I don't want to go somewhere that I'm not ready to go without my like thoughts about it about me, and. To everybody who's listening and watching, this is the Friday after I was at E3 for 3 days. So it's amazing that I've held myself together this well, this long.
Yeah. She's got E3 hangover.
I do.
All right, let's wrap this up, people.
I was there.
Let's wrap it up, people.
All right.
The good viewers have had enough of our shenanigans.
But hopefully they haven't, and hopefully they will return to our shenanigans for our July pick is going to be Spider-Man.
Homecoming.
Homecoming, insert subtitle here. So we're going to go soon. We're going to watch for the Geek Embassy watches. We will be watching Spider-Man in July. I'm not sure. Do anybody know what the date is that it comes out on the top of their heads?
I thought it was the
6th. I think it's 14th, July 14th, maybe?
The 14th, okay.
Or maybe, no, it's the 7th. I think it's July 7th.
Okay. So.
And we're also going to make a pledge that for August, we're not going to be watching a superhero movie.
Yes. Yes. July 7th. Yes, it's in theaters July 7th. So we will have it probably about 2 weeks after that. So about this time in July. So in about a month, we'll have The Geek Embassy Watches Spider-Man Homecoming as our next episode in this series. Please, if you haven't, check out our The Geek Embassy Plays Pathfinder series, where you can watch me flub and fall down and get covered with spiders.
And I saved you.
And you saved me. And we also fight. The episode that's coming out that will already be out by the time this episode is out, we actually fight some goblins for the first time, which is really exciting too. So. Go check out The Geek Embassy Watches, The Geek Embassy Plays, and check out thegeekembassy.com. We love your thoughts and your comments. Please share. And until next time, get your geek on.
Whoop, whoop.
Bye.
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 All right, clapboard.
Clapboard.
Yeah, where's the end sign?
Beanie.
Yeah, upside down Starks. It still says we're live.
I know, I haven't hit the button yet.